the Tower, your daily look around the world of sports with Horns 24/7 insider Jeff Howe on your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
Times, they are a-changing for the Texas Longhorns, for the Oklahoma Sooners, for the SEC, for the Big 12 as we knew it. It's a brand new day, and we're, I'd say, really, two-thirds or halfway through the process. We're getting there for Texas to become a new member of the SEC. This is Light the Tower. This is The Horn. I am Jeff Howe. We're in our two-week run where we've lost our way. Craig is on vacation, enjoying some well-deserved time off. Snoop Daniel behind the glass. We're flying solo today. My colleague at Horns 24/7, Chip Brown, will be in tomorrow in this time slot. Bucky Godbolt will be sitting in from 10 to noon. I'm interested to get Bucky's take because Bucky's been through a couple of these. He's been through all of these as a coach and a media member. He was a coach when Texas made the jump from the Southwest Conference to the Big 12. He's been a media member when Texas almost left the Big 12 the first time, and now in his seat as part of that morning show, Mornings with B&E. I want to get Bucky's take, and it's always great to just sit back and talk ball with Bucky.
Who's going to sit in that seat when Bucky gets there?
I'm going to let Bucky have this seat.
Okay.
And I'm going to sit in the Craig White chair.
It's always interesting.
Yeah, I'm not gonna make Bucky move. Why would I do that?
I don't know.
Bucky has seniority over me, so by a lot in many ways. But I'm gonna let Bucky. This is Bucky's actual. This is his spot that I'm sitting in, but this is his actual chair that I'm sitting in. So I'm not gonna ask Bucky to give up his seat. I'll be closer to you on Thursday,
aww.
Snoop. We can like do high fives,
yes,
against the glass.
All right.
Yeah, Bucky will be in on Thursday, and then a lot of you have asked about the recruiting aspect of this. We're going to spend, depending on how the news breaks, my plan is to spend most of Friday's show talking about the recruiting impact, what recruits have said, all of that stuff, with Mike Roach, Horns 24/7 recruiting editor, will be in studio for 2 hours on Friday. So Chip tomorrow, Bucky Thursday, Mike Roach on Friday. Definitely looking forward to this lineup of guests that we have this week. And Snoop, next week we'll have to re-rack it and just do it all over again with a new lineup of guests. And maybe we'll be solo for a couple of days.
Survey.
Here's the thing. Trey got a redo.
He did. He redid his whole list.
Okay. So because Trey opened that can of worms, I think you should get a mulligan.
Yes. I have a whole new list, too.
Do you?
Yes, of course. I'm not going to say Dixie Chicks was the most underrated band.
Okay. So you put more than like 6 minutes into,
yes,
it this time?
Yes, correct.
I'll tell you what. We'll pick a day next week.
All right. And I only really need like 10 minutes. I don't need a whole hour.
We'll pick a day next week. We'll pick a segment. Maybe on next Friday's show. Next Friday. And we'll let you redo the music survey.
Thank you.
We'll go through your previous choices because we have to. We got to needle you for some of those. Is Creed going to be on your music survey?
Not on the new one.
Okay.
But I really do mean that, like, in a way that it just got me off of just listening to, like, Death Row Records and No Limit. You know, I was, yeah, and, like, you know, that's what it did. I started listening and it opened the door for other ones. That's what I meant by Creed changed my life. Not that Scott Stapp personally made me change my, I don't know, my human makeup. I don't know what to say there.
Hey, by the way, when Craig was flying solo last week and he was bringing in,
yeah,
you know, members of the Horn staff, and Keith Moreland came in and did a show, Roger Wallace came in and did a show, did you play the Scott Stapp baseball song?
Nah.
Okay, because that means you've missed your window to do it. So we won't get the Scott Stapp baseball song. Gosh. If you're watching on Twitch right now, you see me continue to grab for my phone because the damn thing just continues to blow up. So that's if I appear distracted, I apologize. But nevertheless, in case you missed it, the news of the day, Texas and Oklahoma have officially requested membership in the SEC to be the 15th and 16th members of the conference. SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey has publicly acknowledged that the SEC has received those letters. So what's next? SEC presidents meet on Thursday. That presumably is when a vote is going to be taken. And then Texas has a Board of Regents meeting scheduled for Friday. That could be when maybe this whole deal gets finalized. So maybe by the end of the week, Texas could be a member of the SEC, and then it becomes a matter of when can that happen as far as are there any buyouts that have to take place? How much money could Texas owe the conference? Is there going to be a conference for Texas to owe money to, and does it just go away? What's the settlement going to be? All of that stuff is to be decided. But here's an interesting tidbit from my colleague Chip Brown, and again, Chip will be in tomorrow. Chip tweeted this out about a half hour ago. A source close to the situation said the buyout money for Texas and Oklahoma to leave the Big 12 before 2025 could come from the roughly $160 million UT is still owed by ESPN for the final 10 years of ESPN's 20-year, $300 million contract for Texas with the Longhorn Network. Now, there's a lot of layers to that, but basically, any way you slice it, the money is there for Texas to leave the Big 12 and be in the SEC long before 2025. So there you have it. Again, we'll get Chip in tomorrow, and we'll break all of this down. But, you know, I do want to go back to something that we talked about yesterday. And just looking at the nature of the Big 12 and the fact that what becomes of the eight teams in the league. And what we talked about yesterday, the more I think about it, it's just that sentimental side of me. The fact that there's not going to be a conference, a major conference in college athletics, let alone college football, where there's going to be a conference with a hub in the state of Texas. The Southwest Conference, the hub was in the state of Texas. The Big 12, the hub was in the state of Texas. We know in the SEC, that's not going to be the case. And that does make me a little bit sad. But at the end of the day, this is, it just feels like all this for me, Snoop, it's bigger than just the topic of conference realignment. Like, and it goes back to what comes next. I just talked about that in Inconceivable. Like, when we talk about marriages and births, people get so worked up about the process leading up to the event, there's no consideration given to what comes after. I think that's what all of us, fans, media members, administrators, I think that's what all of us need to be cognizant of, is what's going to come next. Because I don't think the SEC is stopping at 16 teams. What is Greg Sankey's ultimate vision? And there's no better time for the SEC to establish its dominance and really uplift its brand to be the preeminent brand in college sports, specifically college football, at a time where the leadership in the other leagues, and let's not even throw the Big 12 into consideration for this right now, but the leadership in the Pac-12, the leadership in the Big 10, and the leadership in the ACC, you have new conference commissioners at all of those ports of call. Whereas before, you know, you had a John Swofford, you had a Jim Delaney in the Big Ten, you had even a Larry Scott in the Pac-12, guys that had some sort of forward thinking, some sort of vision, regardless of what you thought of that vision, they had a direction for where they wanted to take their conference. I don't know what direction Kevin Warren wants to take the Big Ten. I don't know what direction the commissioners of the SEC, of the ACC and the Pac-12 want to take their conferences. Greg Sankey effectively is the leader with that's got the longest tenure. He knows the landscape, and he's in a position to really determine what that landscape is going to be for college football for the foreseeable future with name, image, and likeness coming along with the expanded playoff. And now he's continuing, you know, the SEC continues to be aggressive in terms of conference expansion. I just don't know what's next. I don't know if we're going to get to a point where, like, and I don't think it's crazy to throw the scenario out there. Could we look up in 10 years and whether it's still called the SEC or not, that SEC umbrella as we know it now, are we just going to see like the top 32 brands in college football under that SEC umbrella? And you really do now have a true minor league developmental system for the National Football League. It is an NFL-style model. I don't know where it's going to go, but that's what makes this really intriguing for me, is the fact that Greg Sankey is in the best position to not only understand the landscape, but really determine what that landscape is going to be. Because I can't tell you one thing about what the leadership in those other conferences is going to be. The only conference commissioner that I know anything about at this point in terms of their vision is Kevin Warren in the Big Ten, and he got off to a really bad start with his conference membership because he came out really early and had a stance on COVID that the Big Ten wasn't going to play games. And what happened last year? The Big Ten ended up playing football games last year. So it's a really unique time to look at where this is going in terms of major college football. Now, getting back to something I just mentioned, what happens to the rest of the Big 12 and anybody else that considers themselves kind of a major player in college football? And I'm talking about like out west, like Boise State and BYU. Or you look at some of those brands that have been in New Year's Six games in the American. Take a Houston, a program like SMU that's on the rise, a UCF, a Memphis, a Cincinnati. What happens to those programs? And I started thinking about this. And go back to, I think this was right before, if there's a TCU fan that really knows the lineage of this, please feel free, Specs text line 337-3776 to text in and correct me. But I think I've got this right. Before TCU had before the door got cracked open for TCU to join the Big 12, there was some kind of alliance brewing between the old Big East and the Mountain West. And I don't think it quite got it. It was more than a scheduling alliance, but not quite just this massive super conference, if I remember right. And maybe that's where it was headed. It was going to be some super conference. But maybe that's what comes of this. Like I said, ideally, I would really like to see the eight remaining Big 12 schools all find homes in power leagues and just continue to be among the power conferences, and it would be, as we knew it, the Power Four at that point. But if that can't happen, and somebody asks, well, what's a worst-case scenario for Texas and Oklahoma if the SEC vote doesn't work? I don't think that's going to happen. I think Texas and Oklahoma are going to be members of the SEC probably by the end of the week. But what's the worst-case scenario for those other Big 12 schools if they can't find membership in other power leagues? At that point, I think you have to look at it and maybe understanding that whatever TV deals you get, like I said in the first hour, whatever TV deals you get, if you can't attach yourself to another power conference, it's not going to be anywhere near what you had previously with Texas and Oklahoma no longer a part of the league. But do those eight Big 12 schools, and again, I think this is the worst case scenario, because any scenario that involves you putting your fate in the hands of Bob Bowlsby and the leadership at the Big 12, well, you talk about a roll of the dice. That is playing with fire. That's Russian roulette. That's a place where you don't want to be. If I'm those eight schools, I figure out, forget media markets, and again, I think it's worth repeating, last round of conference realignment, we're talking about media markets. Now we're talking about just brands and matchups, and I think now you're not concerned with, okay, if you add, you know, what does the Cincinnati media market bring to you, or what does the Orlando-Tampa media market bring to you? I don't think you have to look at it like that. You just got to look at, for football specifically, what's going to allow you to put the best product on the field. If I'm those, again, this is if you can't get into a power conference, if I'm those eight members of the Big 12, I look at getting to, how do you get to 12 and possibly 14 teams, and what teams do you add? And I think this is the scenario now where you can ask a BYU and a Boise State, accept them as football members only. That gets you to 10. And then take a UCF, maybe a UCF and a Cincinnati, and that gets you, or that gets you to 10, that would get you to 12, and then maybe you do Houston at SMU, that gets you to, you at that point, to me, the piece of the pie from which you will slice it up is going to be so much smaller that I don't think it's going to matter how many slices of that pie there are, whether you want to go to 10, whether you want to go to 12, whether you want to go to 16, and effectively, does the Big 12, can the Big 12 add enough members, basically whatever's left over from the league as we know it, with the top end of the group of five, and now you do have, it's really not the power five anymore, it really is kind of the power four and a half. You're not quite a power five league because you just don't have those top end brands, but you're better than like where the American is now or where the Mountain West is now. So I don't know what the future holds for those, the rest of the Big 12, but it's not a good place to be in. Like I said, I would like for, to me, the best case scenario in all of this, and I do wonder, somebody's going to get left out in the cold if you just look at the numbers game, right? Like any scenario, and I know we've done this a lot on the flagship message board, looking like, okay, what happens to the rest of the conference? Like, K-State could be the school that's just kind of on the outside looking in, because the reports are that the Big Ten is only going to take AAU universities. Well, there's only two of those in the Big 12 right now of the eight remaining schools. And they actually happen to be geographically really good fits for the Big Ten, that being Kansas and Iowa State. Now, if you're the Big Ten, do Kansas and Iowa State do anything to boost your football profile? No, not really. You're not adding football blue bloods, even though in our discussion last night at the Leander Beer Market for the Horn Top 20 Roundtable, as we formalize the Horn Top 20, which begins next Monday, I think Iowa State is a consistent year from Brock Purdy away from being a playoff team. I think Brock Purdy is going to make the difference between Iowa State being a contender in the Big 12 and being a legitimate playoff team. That's how good I think Iowa State is going to be this year. But overall, the Iowa State brand, it's not even anywhere close to like when the Big Ten added Nebraska 10 years ago. It's more like, it's probably a step up from adding Maryland and Rutgers, but not by much in terms of historically what Iowa State has been. In Kansas, sorry, BK, and my colleague at 24/7 Sports, Kevin Flaherty, if you're listening, Kansas does nothing to add. It probably, as a matter of fact, adding Kansas probably hurts the football profile of the Big Ten. But those are landing spots for those schools. Now you've got West Virginia. You know, the ACC didn't really seem too interested in West Virginia, but for the sake of the future of your conference, solidifying that thing and just kind of adding brands, you know, if you can add West Virginia and make Notre Dame a full-fledged member, which I still don't see enough. I don't see enough to be gained from Notre Dame by becoming a full-fledged member of the ACC, meaning you would take your football membership, you would be an ACC member at that point. I still don't see enough. But the ACC seems like a nice landing spot for West Virginia. And then if I'm kind of the four remaining schools, the three in Texas with Oklahoma State, and I go to the Pac-12, and my pitch for the Pac-12 is really simple. If you want your conference footprint to stop in Denver, Colorado, that kind of Denver, Boulder metro area, then stay as you are and be irrelevant pretty much once you get out of the Mountain Time Zone. But if the Pac-12 wants some relevance in the state of Texas, in the Central Time Zone, to expand their footprint, to make sure they're bumping up right where now. We talked about this yesterday when we had our live Longhorn Blitz in this time slot when Matt Butler and Rod Babers were in here. Like, I-35 could really be the line of demarcation between where the Pac-16 at that point stops and the SEC begins. If you've got Baylor and TCU and Texas Tech now in the Pac-12 bumping up, and Baylor and TCU would bump up against Texas, that's where the SEC would start. And that, to me, is the best-case scenario. I would like to see that happen because, you know, Pac-12 Matt texting in, on the text line. He thinks it's a good thing. He hopes some Big 12 teams move over to the Pac-12 to make that league more relevant. We talk about TV deals. Like, I don't know. I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall in the meetings when Larry Scott went over the Pac-12, their plan for the regional networks, because it has been an unmitigated disaster. Like, the Pac-12, and granted, from a football standpoint, like, the weird COVID year hasn't helped, and this topsy-turvy roller coaster USC has been on for about the last 15 years, that hasn't helped either. But the Pac-12, from a national standpoint, is pretty dadgum irrelevant. And I think your only hope to get a foothold beyond that mountain time zone in the central time zone and to be able to call Texas part of your recruiting footprint, part of your conference footprint, man, add those three Texas schools and Oklahoma State to the party and just kind of beef up your conference with whatever's left. It's not the scenario that you once thought you could have when Texas and Oklahoma were part of that equation, but it's the next best thing. And for that league, for people like Pac-12, Matt, that are Pac-12 fans, I think the worst thing for any of these leagues to do is just sit around and do nothing. Like, none of the options are overly sexy, but it's better than standing pat and just kind of leaving your membership wondering, why are you in a leadership position if you're just sitting around while at a time where the SEC is being overly proactive and you're sitting around doing nothing? So once we get done with Texas and Oklahoma and their membership as SEC programs, which, again, could be finalized by the end of the week, what becomes of the remaining Big 12 schools? What do the other three major conferences do at that point to poach members or strengthen their membership, expand their footprints, add some brands? Where is college football going? Don't lose sight of what happens next is my point after the Texas and Oklahoma issue gets resolved, because what happens next is going to shape where we're at in college football for the foreseeable future, and it could, by the time the dust settles, it could look vastly different than what we've known that sport to be. Take a break. Our next Longhorn Notebook and our final Longhorn Notebook of the show. Did I say Longhorn Network in there?
I don't know.
Our final Longhorn Notebook of the show will be coming up next. But before we go to break, getting tongue-tied today, Snoop, doing this by myself.
I was going to say, nobody really does shows solo except for you and Chad. Everybody else, I mean, so it's not for the weak of heart to hold it down solo dolo.
Whether it's good or bad is up to the listener, but it's like I told Chad, and I told other people, hey, if you don't trust me to do a two-hour show by myself, then why am I even here? So that's kind of how I look at it. But at any rate, I'll get a shot of water. I'll catch my breath. Right now, we're going to give away our second and final copy of the day of Dave Campbell's Texas Football Magazine. Snoop, we'll continue to give, those of you listening on the app, we'll continue to give you a chance to win a copy of DCTF for the great price of free 99. Snoop, what caller?
In the memory of the beloved Big 12, we'll take caller 12.
Caller number 12. Call the hotline 447-3776. Not the text line, call the hotline 447-3776. Be caller 12 right now to win a copy of Dave Campbell's Texas Football. Take a break, come back. We'll keep the conversation going on the other side, on Light the Tower, on the Horn, live, local, and digital, on the Horn app. Rolling along. Is it really only Tuesday, Snoop? Oh, man.
That's the same thing I said earlier. I'm like, whoa, it's only Tuesday.
I need to give me one of them Breve lattes that you enjoy every now and then. And we're rolling along on a Tuesday on Light the Tower, on the Horn, live, local, and digital, on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
So much has happened, it feels like a day has been like a month.
Yeah, man, with all the SEC news and just, again, it's a lot of it's flying. And what's interesting about this is it's not like it was, you know, 10 years ago where Texas fans were just having to deal with the rumor and innuendo and things happening to other schools. Like, if you're a Longhorn fan, if you're a Sooner fan, like, this is happening to your team, to your program right now. It's big stuff. Again, yeah, if you're just tuning in, if you missed it or you just need a re-rack, Texas and Oklahoma have officially, formally applied for membership to the SEC. SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey acknowledging that the conference has received those letters in a statement today, and did reiterate that it would take a three-fourths majority for Texas and Oklahoma to become members. Whenever that vote is taken, that vote could be taken as early as Thursday when the SEC presidents meet. It's expected to be, though, everything I've read, gathered, I'm expecting it to pass. It could be, you know, it sounds like, I've even seen reports from folks who cover Texas A&M that it's expected to be, could be 14-0, a 14-0 unanimous vote to allow Texas and Oklahoma into the SEC. So we'll wait and see what happens on that. And a lot of conversation in the previous segment about what happens to the rest of the Big 12. And Word Woodworker on the Specs text line brings up a good point, 337-3776 on the Specs text line. He said, leagues just can't add teams. Television networks have to pay more so it doesn't dilute the payout for existing members. You know that, but maybe the networks aren't willing to pay more. But that's kind of what I'm talking about, Woodworker. Like, it's just the leagues doing their due diligence. And look, if it's not financially feasible, like if it just doesn't make dollars and cents, the one league where I don't think it would make sense to do anything, well, really, and this kind of goes back to something that Pac-12 Matt brought up, and I think you'll like where I'm going with this. Like, to me, the Pac-12 is a league where it makes the most sense to add teams because whatever next TV deal the Pac-12 negotiates, it's got to be better than whatever they've got right now. And followed by that, like, the ACC's TV deal isn't that great, but you know, if you can add West Virginia and if you can add Notre Dame as a full member, that automatically, not so much the West Virginia part of it, but adding Notre Dame, knowing Notre Dame is going to be a conference member, that makes you a much more attractive option to your television partner. The one conference where it really probably doesn't make dollars and cents for them to add members is the Big Ten, because the Big Ten already has massive payouts. But that's where it's so unique, because again, the ACC, the Big Ten, and the Pac-12, the commissioners, the leaderships of the leadership in those leagues, it's new leadership. So they're having to wrap their heads around a lot. And the Big Ten is the interesting one to me, because do the power brokers in that league, the Ohio States and the Michigans of the world, did they trust Kevin Warren to make the right decision? And whether they expand or not, I think they would like for the leadership to do their due diligence and see, hey, it does make sense. It will help us. We will get more money. You won't be losing money by adding more schools. Or to say, look, we could add Texas, or we could add Kansas and Iowa State and get to 16. But at the end of the day, we'll lose money, and it doesn't make sense. And Big Ten schools don't want to lose money. So I just think doing your due diligence. But for me, the league that makes the most sense is the Pac-12, because just the wacky COVID year and everything going on out in that part of the country, it just seems like that league is as irrelevant as ever. The TV deal did not help at all, because, like, the only place I know where the Pac-12 network exists in those regional networks is when I'm flipping through channels on my channel guide on my cable box, and I just see, like, not available in your area, not available in your area, not available in your area. And sorry, I'm not paying an extra $10 a month to watch, you know, Oregon softball. Sorry, it's not going to happen. So the Pac-12, I think, hopefully can get a better TV deal. And by expanding into the Central Time Zone, adding schools from the state of Texas, maybe that makes it a little more palatable for whoever your television partners are going to be, whether that's ESPN, Fox, CBS. The other big part of this, Snoop, that we've talked about a little bit, but as streaming becomes more prevalent, man, does Amazon decide they want to get in on this? Now, does Jeff Bezos decide he wants to throw some money at it? Does Apple decide they want to get in on college football? I don't know. Maybe that's where the Pac-12 leadership could be forward thinking, but I don't know. It remains to be seen. There's a lot of moving parts, but expansion is definitely on the table as far as those eight leftover schools in the Big 12, what their future becomes. But We've talked a ton of conference expansion, a ton of Texas and Oklahoma out of the Big 12 into the SEC. But I do want to talk a little current Longhorn football, so let's go ahead and do that in the notebook.
Jeff Howe's Longhorn Notebook, brought to you by Cedar Park Overhead Doors. Go to cptours.com.
So this was a question that, if you tuned in to the Horn Top 20 Roundtable last night, again, shout out to the folks at Leander Beer Market for hosting us. Great venue out there. We're an old Leander, Snoop, like not off 183A, like off of old 183, like yeah. Old school Leander's. Really good spot out there. And BK hosted the roundtable and asked all of us this question. And I would ask this on the Specs text line, 337-3776. By the way, who was our winner of this hour's Dave Campbell's Texas Football?
It is J.D. Thompson of Austin.
Nice. Congratulations, J.D. You win a copy of Dave Campbell's Texas Football. But BK posed this question, and it's really gotten my wheels turning. BK asked, at the outset, at the start of the season, as we form this top 20, is Texas a lock as a top 20 program? And my answer was no. I don't think Texas is a lock as a top 20 program coming out of the gate. Now, there's a couple of things to consider here. And I pointed out these two historic facts, and it's going to be interesting to see how both of them play out under Steve Sarkisian. Fred Akers was the last first-year Texas head coach to get off to a start better than 1-2 through his first three games. We know Fred Akers had that undefeated regular season in 1977. Texas goes to the Cotton Bowl and ends up losing to Notre Dame in a game that decided the national champion for the 1977 season. But David McWilliams, John Makovic, Mack Brown, Charlie Strong, Tom Herman, all got off to 1-2 starts. So that's part of the trend Steve Sarkisian is up against. But the way the question was framed, right now do you see Texas a lock as a top 20 team? Right now I don't. But if Steve Sarkisian is the right hire, in the AP poll era, there have only been three Texas head coaches, Jack Cheveny, Ed Price, and Charlie Strong, who failed to improve on the win total from the previous regime. In other words, the head coach they took over for won more games in their last year than they won in their first. And those are three historically bad head coaches at Texas. So that leads me to this conclusion. At the outset, I wouldn't say Texas is a lock as a top 20 team. But the more I think about it, the more I really like the upside of this team. And, you know, you think of, like, ideally, what you would want is you would want something like the trajectory Mack Brown got on that ultimately led to Texas winning a national championship in 2005 and playing for another one in 2009. And I think about the start to it. And, man, that's – I'm not going to say it's a difficult – it's just an overly difficult non-conference schedule, but by no means is it an easy schedule. Like, I'm telling you right now, Louisiana – that Raging Cajun team Billy Napier is bringing in here to DKR on September 4th, and that's a good football team. Bringing back a lot of experience from a team that went 10-1 last year. Their only loss was in a regular season to Coastal Carolina, and they did not get that rematch. Remember, the Fun Belt title game was called off because of COVID. So we didn't get to see Louisiana and Coastal battle for the belt in the Fun Belt. Well, we didn't get that because of COVID protocols. Louisiana is a really good team. And I've said this before about Arkansas. I feel like the more I look at it, I really do feel like Arkansas, the expectations for what Arkansas was going to be last year with the first-year head coach in Sam Pittman, with a team that was quite frankly just awful under Chad Morris. The expectations for what Arkansas was going to be playing an SEC-only schedule were so low. Like, I thought there was a really good chance Arkansas was going to go 0-10 last year. The expectations were so low that the fact that they won some games and were competitive in several other games, I think that's kind of overinflated the expectations for Arkansas this year. To me, that game in Fayetteville on September 11th, it's not about the opponent. It's about, can this Texas team, with a first-year head coach in their first true road game, can they handle an environment that the vast majority of this roster, unless you've played, unless you're a guy on this roster that's played in a full-capacity Texas OU game, you haven't experienced anything like you're going to experience. Basically, guys that were on that 2019 roster, I'll kind of count the game at home against LSU, but Texas OU is the closest thing that anybody that was in that game in 2019 is going to experience that can prepare them for Fayetteville. The rest of the roster, like if you're Bijan Robinson, you haven't experienced anything in the ballpark with what you're going to see going to Fayetteville on September 11th. So that game, to me, it's more about the environment, the atmosphere, and all the ancillary stuff, then specifically the opponent. And then you finish up non-conference with Rice. So to me, taking stock of where Texas is after the first three games, again, if Steve Sarkisian can buck that trend and be the first year Texas head coach since Fred Akers to get off to better than a 1-2 start. Like, I don't think Texas fans will be happy with a 2-1 start, but I think there's a lot of Texas fans that would maybe take that and be okay with it depending on what it looked like. I don't think a 1-2 start is going to excite anybody in this fan base. And if Texas were to start 3-0, that's a hell of a 3-0 start considering the first two legs of what you would have conquered, beating a really good Louisiana team and then going on the road, kind of staring the devil in the face, so to say, of the environment you're going to face, not so much the opponent in Fayetteville, and then coming back and beating Rice. Taking stock of where Texas is after the first three games is going to give you a really good idea of the trajectory of this team, because I do think by the end of the year, we could look up and see Texas, if they're 3-0 after the first three games, to me, the worst-case scenario at that point is 8-4. And I've said it before, I'll say it again. Just having a winning record in the Big 12 this year, as good, take Kansas out of the mix, as good as this, I think this league is going to be top to bottom, that's a good year. But if Texas is 3-0 after those first three games, man, 9-3 becomes a real possibility. And then if you're 9-3 in the regular season and you go into bowl season with a chance to go get a 10th win, that's a damn good first year under Steve Sarkisian. You would be on a better trajectory at that point, considering the non-conference schedule you played, considering top to bottom what this league looks like. Like, I really do think, like, you've got Oklahoma as a legitimate national championship contender. We talked about that last night on the roundtable. Like, how good is Oklahoma? I said it last night. If you're looking at kind of the teams that of late have dominated their appearances in the college football playoff, Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, and I'll throw Georgia in that mix because I just think Georgia is just so freaking talented that they are, if Georgia can figure it out offensively with Todd Monken and they've got something in JT Daniels, which I believe they do, and everything clicks, Georgia's definitely good enough to not only win the SEC but go win a national championship. Where would you rank Oklahoma in the pecking order of those schools? I ranked Oklahoma, the only school I would put ahead of Oklahoma for sure in my mind is Alabama. Like, I think Oklahoma, with Spencer Rattler coming back, it's Lincoln Riley in offense. He's going to figure it out. Bill Bedenbaugh, I think, is probably the best offensive line coach in the country. And then their defensive line, it's as deep and talented a defensive line as Oklahoma's had in the last 10 to 15 years. So I think Oklahoma's a legitimate national title contender. They're at the top of the league. Iowa State, I just mentioned it previously in the show. I think Iowa State is a consistent year from Brock Purdy away from being a legitimate contender for the college football playoff. Likewise, you look at the rest of the league, I think TCU is a consistent year from Max Duggan away from being a legitimate Big 12 title contender. And then you've got Texas. So if Texas, the first three games, it's going to hold the key to me and what Texas looks like coming out of those first three games. Again, if it's 2-1, you're probably looking at something maybe like an 8-4 type season, a 7-5 type season. If you're 1-2, then you're probably looking at a season record-wise similar to what Tom Herman or Charlie Strong had in their first year. But again, if you're 3-0, I think the sky's the limit, because keep in mind, this Texas team might be the least experienced team in the Big 12. A lot of TCU, Texas Tech, I know, has a lot of super seniors. The same thing for Kansas State. There's a lot of experience coming back in this league. Texas in terms of experience doesn't have it. But you start looking at the talent on this Texas roster, that young talent from those recruiting classes that Tom Herman put together, that's now it's up to Steve Sarkisian and this staff to go develop that talent and turn it into talent that not only can someday get to the National Football League, but can help this program compete for championships. If this staff is a really good developmental staff like Steve Sarkisian wants to be, we're going to find out in the 2021 season how good they are at doing that. Because if they are good, then the trajectory at the end of the season, we'll see it being there, and we'll see, hey, the goal for Texas fans, ideally, to me, best case scenario should be by the end of the year, Texas should be one of those teams that all the national talking heads are saying, man, you really don't want to get Texas in a bowl game. I would not want to play Texas right now. Be thankful you played Texas in September and early October rather than playing them in November. So, to me, I would not say Texas is a lock as a top 20 team right now as we sit here in late July, but I really dig the upside of this team and the fact that Steve Sarkisian has made it a point to hire assistant coaches that can help this program really get the most out of the talent they've got and can develop talent and be a good talent development program. If we start to see some of that come to fruition in year one, the trajectory at the end of the year should be where a lot of Longhorn fans feel like going into that 22 season, now you're really onto something and you're building a program that can go compete at the highest level. Take a break, come back, and wrap up this edition of Light the Tower on the Horn, live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
B&E.
So when you first... like Maui, now we feel the good vibrations. So many females, so much inspiration.
Wrapping up a Tuesday edition of Light the Tower on the Horn, live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. Jeff Howe, Snoop Daniel, Craig Way is out on vacation. Solo today, but running the guest host for the rest of the week. The guest co-host, Chip Brown, tomorrow. Bucky Godbolt Thursday, Mike Roach Friday, and then we'll do it all again next week. We're a little over a week from reporting day. The Longhorns are going to report for fall camp next Thursday on August the 5th, and then it's going to get rolling on August 6th, Snoop.
Are you going to be down at the practice physically?
I have no idea. I've had people ask me this. I have no idea what protocols are going to be this year for covering practice. I've received an indication that we could be back to doing some on-campus, in-person availabilities this year, but as far as what that schedule looks like for us, I have not heard anything official from John Bianco and the folks at Texas yet. So hopefully, what I'm hoping for, Snoop, is just being around campus again. Like, I don't even need practice access. Just being around campus and feeling like you're actually doing something. You know what I mean? Just being out amongst the people. That's what I'm hoping for.
High school football practices start for the teams that didn't do spring camp. They start next Monday.
Yeah. Are you going to be anywhere on Monday?
Yeah. I'm starting at Hayes, which made the state 6A D2 Final Four last mm-hmm. year, at 6 a.m. And then I wind up at Bowie, which I think is going to make a big bounce back this year. Finish behind LT and Westlake, of course, but at 6 a.m.
You kind of, in our conversations with Coach Abels last year, they were young and knew it was going to kind of be a tough road to hoe last year. But yeah, Bowie could be on the uptick this year.
I think they're going
to
be back.
Nice. Couple quick shout-outs before we get out of here. Once again, got a shout-out my guy Alden and the folks at Centex Relocation Solutions. 512-662-2829, CentexRelocation.com. They helped me get moved. They can help you get moved. Residential, commercial, furniture install, they do it all at Centex Relocation Solutions. And you hear... He gets mentioned a lot on this program. I cannot thank Tom McKay and the folks at AV Consultations enough for handling the install and the setup of all my equipment, my entertainment stuff at home. Everything went smoothly yesterday, Snoop. So a big shout out to Tom McKay and the folks at AV Consultations. Got it all hooked up, and I'll be telling you folks more about what all Tom McKay did for me and what AV Consultations can do for you. Trust me, do not try to go to a big box store and get this thing pieced out on your own. Tom McKay can get you squared away with the fine folks, everything they do at AV Consultations, everything that they offer. Snoop, Thanks for all of your hard work today. We will be back to do it again tomorrow. Chip Brown again sitting in here co-hosting with me for 2 hours. Bucky Godbolt on Thursday. Mike Roach on Friday. Wherever you're listening, however you listen to the show today, we thank you so much for being a part of this presentation of Light the Tower. Shirts and Skins, Chad and Trey coming up next, and we will be back tomorrow to light it up from 10 to noon on the Horn, live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. Just a swinging mic, talking, won't get you down with the sick. Take a with some and take.